you know, I want people to understand that, hey, we're right there in it with you. If you're a parent, or if you've got preteens and you're getting ready to go into it, it can be a really overwhelming season. And I think for us too, it's so different than when I was that age. So as a parent, I think it's probably always a challenge to be a parent of teens, but it does seem to me that with the shifts that have happened, not just culturally, but even just in terms of technology, like you said, you know, smartphones and the internet, the challenges that we face as parents today versus the challenges that my parents faced when I was a teenager. I'm joined today by Jennifer Beidle. Jennifer is a fellow California, and our paths crossed maybe 2 years ago now. It's hard to keep up with time, Jen, but we were both part of the Colson Fellows program, the San Diego chapter. So welcome back onto the show. You came on last year, and you know, we had a great conversation around cultural issues, and particularly at that time, we were talking about progressive Christianity. And how that's made inroads into the traditional church. Today, we're going to talk about shaping the next generation and how we can help our teens navigate challenges that culture and society is throwing at them. But before we dive into that, maybe just share with us a little bit about who you are and where you're at in the world, what life and ministry looks like for you these days.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on again. And, life is great. I'm now in my second year of this parachurch ministry that I started, which is called United. It's really just a small ministry out of my home right now. We have about 20 to 25 or so students and their parents that come over every other week. And really sort of the mission and the goal of this ministry is to equip and train and come alongside other parents who are walking this out and trying to intentionally disciple their kids and cultivate like a fully integrated biblical worldview into their kids. And United stands for an acronym, and it's to teach and train the students to be able to understand the Bible, to navigate the culture, to intentionally seek truth, to think biblically, to be equipped to live faithfully, and to discern the times in which we live. Do we accomplish all of that all the time? No, we just have a very limited time together, but that is the goal. We want to be able to have our kids be able to walk out their faith with confidence and clarity and intentionality, and to know what it really means to deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow Jesus. So, yeah.
You and I were talking in the past couple of weeks as we were just leading up to this conversation, and you had shared something with me at that time where you described a light bulb moment, where you realized that Jesus was inviting you to enter his life. And prior to that, I think the way you phrased it was that you had invited him to be part of your life, and how that was such a pivotal perspective shift. So can you talk a little bit more about that experience, or what led to that realization?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And that was something I did want to talk about today. I think what you're referring to might be the moment. This was about fall 2019 or so. Whenever I was at church and the pastor said, if we aren't intentionally cultivating a biblical worldview into our kids, we're pretty much guaranteeing they're going to walk away from their faith. And it just struck me in that moment that just a few months earlier, my son, at the time he was in public high school, and he had gone to an assembly where they had this teaching on gender fluidity what was then called the gender bred person, teaching that your gender is determined by how you feel, you know, that sort of thing, right? And he knew it was wrong. I knew, well, that's not right. But I didn't really know how to go into detail and in depth and get underneath why it was wrong. And so from that moment, when I heard that sermon, it was almost like one of those, I don't have many of these lightning bolt strikes moments, kind of moments from the Holy Spirit, but that was one. And starting from that moment in my journey going forward, I started to realize that, wait, I don't have a biblical worldview myself. So then how am I supposed to cultivate that into my kids when I'm not really viewing the world in the way that we should be as Christians? And so it was kind of like what you're saying. It's, we often hear in the church, well, I invited Jesus into my life. We hear that all the time, but the Bible teaches that it's not so much that we're inviting Jesus into our life, but rather he is inviting us into his life, into his story. And I think this is what happens within the church a lot, is that we tend to have a very private faith, like a two-chapter story of just sin and salvation, and it becomes very privatized. And and personalized. Hmm. And we are called to have a personal faith with Christ, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But as John Stone Street says, our faith should not only be personal, but we should be living that out. It should never be private. We should be asking, what is our salvation for? Right. Hmm. And so, as my friend Krista von Trenger says, she says, when we share the gospel with others, we are inviting them to embrace an entirely different way of seeing reality itself. Right. We aren't merely inviting people to get their sins forgiven or go to heaven or get a ticket out of hell kind of experience. Right. We're inviting them to have a completely different worldview. Right. Following Jesus is not something that we just simply add to our existing life, but rather it's a way of reorienting our own lives in a completely different way of seeing reality as it is. Right. Instead of, and I think that that's what happens in our church, that whenever we don't do this, whenever we make it all about our own personal salvation, it keeps us from being effectively living out a fully orbed faith into all spheres and areas of our life. So
I love that. Faith should always be personal, but never private. That's such a great quote. And it does give us, I think, a lot of guidance. You know, we also tend to dematerialize faith. So, and for sure, you know, God is spirit. Those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. But we can come to view this world and certainly our own earthly lives as being sort of a bus stop, and we're just waiting for the real journey to start, which is going to happen when the Lord returns or after we die and we go to heaven. And it really does a disservice to understanding God's purposes and his involvement in the world today, that God is acting. Part of the good news is what Jesus is doing today. My understanding of the gospel is that it's God's message of good news concerning Jesus, you know, who he is, what he has done, what he is doing, what he will do, and how we can be part of it. And I think so often with our faith, we focus on what Jesus has done, what he has accomplished already on the cross through his death, burial, and resurrection. And we can be very excited about what he will do one day, you know, the return of Christ, his restoration of all things, but we can really lose sight of what Jesus is doing today. And that's part of the good news that he's inviting us into to become a part of. Mm-hmm. So I love how that lightning bolt, lightning bolt is definitely a stronger, I called it a light bulb, but that lightning bolt moment that the Lord gave you. And also I love the fact that you describe that you realized that you had to step into taking ownership of learning how to better see the world the way God sees it, but also learn how to articulate God's viewpoint on a lot of what we see happening in society and culture today. So what were some of the ways that you began to seek out growth and development as a believer, but also as a parent of teens?
Well, a couple months later, well, at the time I started to just do some research. The church had given us a resource list, and on the back of that was kind of my start, right? So they had books on there like Mama Bear Apologetics, Natasha Crane. Mm-hmm. There's so many great so many great resources out there. And we're blessed with this technology and the internet. I mean, so there's so many things at our fingertips. Like if you're looking for it, you can find to help equip you. And so I've gone to like so many conferences. And then I've met people at the conferences. I took a lot of classes online. I took a couple with the Norm Geisler Institute on the essentials of the faith, and with David Geisler on conversational evangelism, and starting to, because, you know, up until that point, I hadn't even really read the Bible well. You know, it was more of a devotional kind of experiences whenever I would read the Bible, right? And it wasn't until I took hermeneutics, it was a class called How to Really Read the Bible, or Really Interpret the Bible, sorry, with, as I mentioned her before, Krista Bontrager, who on, if you look her up on social media, you'd look her up under Theology Mom. And her classes and really learning how to read the Bible well and interpret it well completely transformed my way of seeing reality, my worldview, because I had never been taught the Bible as a cohesive whole up until that point, of a story of reality, so to speak, starting at the creation of the world, moving into the fall, moving into redemption, and then the new creation. And so that class was just a pivotal turning point for me in the way I viewed what it means to be a Christian. And then going on and just taking several more classes. And as you know, then ultimately ending up going through the Colson Fellows program, because I just kept coming back to worldview. I kept coming back to how I had compartmentalized my faith. I hadn't understood it well. It was sort of, you know, in bits and pieces. And once that clicked for me, once I understood that Christianity isn't as much a religion that we choose to follow as it is a reality we're meant to inhabit. You know, once that really clicked for me, that am I really living that out day to day as if it is the whole truth about all of reality? That's what I kept getting drawn back to. And then that's what I wanted to really instill into not only my kids, but then I felt the Lord calling me into helping other parents and other students to really cultivate this into them. Because I think as parents, oftentimes we get so hung up on behavior management and on, and not, because if we can get under that and help our kids to view Christianity as a worldview, that will then feed up into, you know, the behavioral component. So we need to get at their hearts, at their, you know, in their intellect and their minds. You know, we're called to love the Lord our God with all our hearts, minds, soul, and strength, and not neglect the intellectual part too. And so, yeah,
that picture of being more focused on the behavior. I mean, there's so many threads that I want to highlight for people who are listening or watching. One is just that there are a wealth of resources available to us as modern day followers of Christ. And as parents, there are many resources, but we have to take initiative to seek them out and to purposely develop ourselves so that we can raise our children up to know the Lord and to know His ways and to walk with Him. And, you know, you've been a great example of that, I think, over the past, you know, sounds like 6 to 7 years, where, you know, you had that understanding, and then you purposely began not just to try to prepare and protect your children, but to personally develop yourself so that you could do that. And then secondly, you know, this idea of being more focused on the behavior of our children, I think maybe it goes back again to understanding our role and our place in this world as the Lord's people, that we aren't just called to... I've often thought that, like, if you think of the orders, the religious orders of the Middle Ages, you know, you kind of had two, this is a gross oversimplification, but you kind of had the monastic orders that really withdrew from the world and sought to keep themselves from being stained or corrupted by a fallen world. And then you had the missionary orders that were very much integrated into society, that sought to go into new places with the gospel and to transform culture and societies. And I feel like that historical reality is true for us internally, that we're often pulled in these two directions in terms of understanding our faith and trying to practice it, you know, to withdraw and to keep our families away from the corruption of the world, or learning how to actually be part of a fallen world, but to be agents of redemption in it. Mm-hmm. And in, to do that, I think it's a much harder path, and it goes beyond just behavior. You know, you actually have to be able to identify ways of thinking, worldviews. But it actually becomes really fun when can interact with your children on that level. Like, what is the value system behind this way of thinking? What's actually happening? And I think kids are actually becoming much more savvy themselves to identify that, hey, I'm being pressured to accept a certain point of view and to act a certain way, but what's behind it? There's something behind it aside from just, you know, religion or Christian points of emphasis on behavior. Like, our culture itself is enforcing certain behavioral norms on the youth. And I find a lot of the youth are picking up that, hey, I'm being manipulated, or there's something behind this emphasis that I can't really question or talk about. It's actually a very religious impulse that our culture is pushing. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's not necessarily a question there, Jen, but anything that you want to comment on that? And then I do have a question that I'd like to ask you after that.
Yeah, I love that you said that our kids are savvy. They pick up on that. And I agree. And I think it's important when we're talking with our kids about these things that we're not doing what the culture is doing and just telling them what to think, because that's what right. they're getting. They're being indoctrinated. They're being told what to think. And we don't want to combat that by telling them just what to think from our side, right? We want to actually right. help them understand how to think. We want to train them and teach them how to be critical thinkers. So not because I think as parents, sometimes we instinctually just want to bubble wrap our kids away. That's like right. especially as moms, that's a natural thing that we want to do, is just protect our kids from, you know, everything they're seeing in the culture, which is not a good thing, right? We want to do age appropriately. We want to inoculate our kids, you know, like if you're going to give your kid a vaccine and inoculate them from getting the measles, you know, it exposes them just to a little bit, but it builds them up to be able to protect them. Right. And so it's sort of like exposing them to what they're ultimately going to be faced with in culture. And they are way more than I think you realize, right? Because there's the internet and everything else. And so right. in that, we're teaching them not only what we believe, but why. And J. Warner Wallace, Sean McDowell say to always give two whys for every what. So teaching them not only what they believe, but why. Why do we believe this? And then furthermore, why does it even matter? Like, why does this matter for your life? Why does this matter for reality? That's more like a worldview component too. And so, and then whenever you expose them to the things they see in culture, you know, show them, ask them good questions. Like, well, what do you think about that? Why do you think that this is a little bit sus? And my daughter always cringes when I say that, you know? and then show them. And the good news is that we have the truth on our side. You know, the truth tends to stand, you know?
Yeah. I think that the truth is defensible both rationally, but then also as it's lived out over time. And sometimes it does take time. So I guess if we think of the big picture, I'm fascinated by where our society and culture is at now, because it does seem to me that we are a good 10 to 20 years into a shift in the public discourse around faith, but also just around the source of reality or the source of truth. I may try to find a link to this, but Sam Harris, who's a famous atheist and one of the four horsemen of the new atheist movement from back in the 90s and early 2000s, had an interview with Jordan Peterson. And there's a few reasons why this is a fascinating conversation. One is that he was having this conversation with Jordan Peterson probably maybe 7 or 8 years ago now. So it was when Jordan Peterson was not nearly as well known as he is today. But the conversation was, the title of the episode for the podcast is What is Truth? And these guys spent 2+ hours just trying to come to an agreed upon understanding of where do we look to find truth so that we can begin to call a spade and live a certain way. And it was just, it was a fascinating conversation between two, regardless of what you think about them, thinkers who spend a lot of time trying to answer this. And they couldn't even come to agreement on the source of truth. Mm-hmm. And of course, as believers, we believe that revelation is the ultimate source of truth, that God reveals himself. He's done that through his creation, through the natural order. He's done that through the Holy Scriptures, through the prophets. He's done that through his son, Jesus. He does that through our conscience. There are many ways that God reveals himself, but ultimately the ultimate source of truth is outside of ourselves, that it's outside of this imminent domain that we live in. Whereas the materialist would say, like, no, it's only what can be discerned from the material world itself. And I think we've had a 10 to 20 year run now where we've really been trying to order society around that understanding of truth, that truth is something that each person, you know, truth is in the eye of the beholder. And it's not working so well. So I think kids are beginning to see, like, well, is there a better way? What made you feel like you needed to take the initiative? Because I think that there are probably going to be a lot of parents who agree that they want to protect and prepare their children for the real world. Maybe they don't see that opportunity in their current church community. You know, you took the initiative to start that with United Next Gen. And I know you've said that it's just a small community, but I think that's what we need. I think we need thousands of these small, localized communities where parents are taking the leadership of shaping this next generation. So what gave you the confidence or convinced you that you should do it, that you could do it?
That's a good question. For me, I a lot of it was born out of my own sort of testimony and my own sort of journey. And whenever I was 11, I was baptized. I didn't really understand the gospel though, looking back. I didn't understand. I always had questions. I wasn't discipled really. And I always wondered, you know, things like why did Jesus have to die for our sins? Why couldn't he just forgive us? And I had all these questions, but I never verbalized them. And I kind of just internalized it all. I had a big fear of death my whole childhood. I had a lot of doubts. And so as I, excuse me, it's a long story, but kind of as I grew into adulthood, ended up having kids, it was sort of a slow journey for me of developing a more personal faith. And it wasn't until later that I started to discover apologetics and kind of address the doubts, the deep-seated doubts that I had kind of stuffed down about the existence of God, and that faith wasn't blind, and that we have good evidence, and, you know, in the resurrection, and that, you know, it's not just that we believe in God, but Christianity is a knowledge tradition. You know, it's more than just a belief. It's a knowledge backed up by really, really good evidence and reasons and support. So I think for me, a lot of it was just that I was hungry myself, you know? And so it was almost like, and I think a lot of it was the Holy Spirit, honestly. It was just this supercharged just joy and passion, and I loved it, and I couldn't get enough. For like, after that fall of September, 2019, when I started taking these classes, I was reading these books. For me, it was just, I love apologetics. I loved the Bible. I loved learning about worldview. It never felt like a chore. And yes, I wanted to do this to equip my kids I started to lead parent book clubs and getting other parents on board. But I think it was the Holy Spirit in me, I believe. And I think it still mm-hmm. is, combined with just wanting to get to know God better, just having that confidence in my faith and what I believe, why I believe it. And that if this is true, which I believe that it is, that's all I wanted to do, was to pursue the Lord and shout it from the rooftops. And I want my kids to know, and I want my kids to walk in this, and I want others to walk fully into their faith and have their eyes opened to the whole reality of what it means to be a Christian. I don't know if that answers your question, but.
It does. And I've got some follow-up questions, but this is why I love talking to you. Like our two slogans, our two main slogans here with Into the Harvest is, helping ordinary believers be disciples and make disciples in everyday places. And so whoever is listening or watching right now, if you think of yourself as just an ordinary believer, an ordinary follower of Jesus, that's good. We actually need all the ordinary believers all around the world to learn how to be disciples and make disciples in everyday places, not just in sacred spaces. But the other slogan is learning to live an ancient faith in modern life. And I think this slogan is at the heart of what we're talking about, is that we have access to the unchanging truth of God, but we're constantly having to put that into practice in a culture and a society that's always changing and always throwing new challenges at us. And so, you're a great example of someone who's seeking to do both of those things. A follow-up question I have for you is maybe just on a very practical level, like what does it look like for you to, like, how did you start the parent book club? How did you get teens to show up at United Next Gen?
That's a great question.
Actually, maybe as part of that answer is, tell us just like, how many children do you have? What are their ages? Just to give folks a sense of where you're at in life.
Okay. Well, I have three kids. One is no longer a teen. He turned 20, my oldest. And then I have a almost 18-year-old about to graduate from high school. And I have a almost 15-year-old daughter who is a freshman. So that's where I'm at. And what was your other question?
So how did you, what did it look like to start the parent book club?
Oh,
and
okay.
How did you go about starting United Next
Got
Gen
it.
and get the teens to actually come out?
Okay. So it kind of came through a lot of different, like there were some families from churches. There was a friend that I met in an online class I took who happened to live in San Diego, who is very passionate about apologetics as well. And so then she's a homeschooler. So then she grabbed a few of her friends from homeschool. Then there was a couple of kids from the public school, because my daughter used to be in public school at the time. And so it was a hodgepodge of just different Christian families from around the area. And at first for the book clubs, it wasn't teens, it was just the parents. And so the parents would come, and we went through Thaddeus Williams' book, Confronting Injustice Without Compromising Truth, to think about, how do we think about this whole movement for social justice versus biblical justice and critical theory and, all that. Mm. We went through Mama Bear Apologetics, which is a great starter book for anyone listening. If you're just kind of dipping your toes into this area, that's a great one. We did a Mama Bear Apologetics Guide to Sexuality, which eventually led into me going into Colson Fellows and such. But it kind of just was sort of, it just sort of started out of people I knew locally, basically. And then they would pull in a friend, and then that friend would pull in a friend. And we just started to get together, and it just kind of grew by word of mouth. And then the teens themselves didn't start coming until I actually officially started United itself, which was fall of 2022. And so the teens would come with their parents. And so, of course, you know, it's always going to be like, oh, mom, I don't know anyone, or I need a friend to come with me. You know how it goes. But eventually, though, and it was just so funny because they all came over last night and they were here. And there was about 10 or so high school girls. I don't know why we have a large group of high school girls this time. And now we're ending to the end of this school year, and it's a new crop. A lot of them are new this year. And we had the best night. We had the best night just because we've gotten to a point where we're all comfortable with each other. They've gotten to know one another. Great conversations. Last night, we're talking about how we can be good friends to friends of ours who are struggling with sexual sin. So we've gotten to the practical end of we're doing Christopher Yuan's Holy Sexuality Project. And they actually enjoy coming in. And so it's just a process of, you know, it takes time. I wish we had more time than every other week, but, you know, I'll take what I can get. So.
Yeah. With the Parenting Book Club, I know I'm just trying to give folks as many concrete data points as possible. You know, how often are you still doing those? How often did you meet as parents, and what did it look like to go through a book like Mama Bear Apologetics?
Okay. So we would meet probably, I think we met like once a week for about 6 weeks. So it'd be like, if you're going to do a book for a book club like that, I would say, I mean, look at the amount of chapters, and usually those types of things are, I would do it once a week for 6 week period, something like that. And, and a lot of times these books will have discussion questions you can use. So it's really not even that much work to do it. It's basically reading two or three chapters, maybe a week, getting together, grabbing some discussion questions and just talking about it. And that, you know, I mean, even if you're doing that once a week with a group of parents, you know, that's a lot. And you don't know what God is going to do with that. I actually have a parent or two from those initial book clubs who are now leading their own book clubs in their own churches and in their own mom groups. And so it's kind of this ripple effect.
Absolutely. I think so often we feel like we're just along for the ride when it comes to culture and where society is going and the challenges that we face as parents. I once heard a quote that the greatest waste of time is the time spent getting started. And I've seen that to be true in my own life, that if we'll just step out in faith and try something new, we're often surprised at how many people are ready and will get involved in something like that if one person just takes the initiative to throw out an idea or to start something new. You talked about the going through the Holy Sexuality Project, and we actually had Dr. Yuan on the podcast last fall. But I have not gone through the Holy Sexuality Project. So he's got the book Holy Sexuality, and then he's got a resource called the Holy Sexuality Project, which is specifically for parents and teens. So could you share just a little bit about how that's worked for you and your group, and maybe what you appreciate about it? And, you know, I'm just thinking about people who might be interested in that type of material for their teens or youth groups.
Yeah, I highly recommend this. Dr. Yuan created this as a resource for parents to use to go through with their teens. So it's not just for parents. And he used the animators, I think, who are part of the Bible Project to do these short videos. And so it's a series of 12 lessons. And with each lesson, there are three very short videos that you watch. And he even provides discussion questions and sort of a discussion guide for you to go through with your teen in between the three videos. So I'd say like the first two videos are maybe like 10 to 12 minutes each. The last video is like 3 minutes. And so it's very doable. And it's just a series of lessons, and you talk with your teen. And I love it because oftentimes you'll get parent resources on things like this, which are great, like, you know, Mama Bear Guide to Sexuality or whatever it might be. But then you know, then it comes time to implement it at home. And you can, but I think this, I really like this resource because it provides sort of a set time of accountability of like, hey, let's sit down, watch this together. And then they can listen to him, you know, say he's so articulate and he lays it out really well. And then you can talk about it. So it just sort of takes the pressure off, I guess, of the parents right. a little bit and having these conversations. And then you're both learning together. I think our parents actually learned a lot from this series. I mean, it was a really yeah. great series. And then it kind of is that launching point from continuing on and having intentional conversations with your kids about sexuality as you go. And so his overall kind of main theme of the whole series, and you probably got this from the book because he kind of based it on that book. You said holy sexuality and the gospel is right. The ultimate goal of sexuality is to glorify God by what it means to take up your cross, deny yourself, and follow Jesus, which is really our ultimate goal in every facet of our lives as Christian. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a biblical worldview way of viewing the whole conversation on sexuality, on gender, on why is sexual immorality such a big deal? There's a lot of theology, a lot of Bible, a lot of scripture. It's just really, really wonderful series that he's done. And it's only $20. I mean, it's a steal. And that $20 that he gets whenever you purchase the series, he's putting all of it back into developing two more series for elementary age students, mm-hmm. sort of the same nature. So it's a great series. I highly recommend it. He addresses like things such as identity, which is really huge right now, and how our culture has turned sexuality from being what we feel and do, but rather turns it into who we are. And, you know, and so he kind of breaks that down. Okay. And so what is our true identity? We are image bearers of God. He talks about attraction and desires and temptation and what that means, biblically speaking. He also goes into the hermeneutics of the Bible. How can we know that the Bible really condemns same-sex sex? And then he kind of takes us through sort of a hermeneutics lesson of sorts. Gender, of course. Yeah, it's a great, great series.
Yeah, his book, Holy Sexuality and the Gospel, easily on my list of top five books that I've read over the past 5 years. So we'll provide links both to that book, but also to the Holy Sexuality Project, because it has its own website that folks can go and learn more about the series. One thing I did appreciate so much about the book was he really does root it in creation and God's original intent yep. for men and women. So he goes all the way back to Genesis and talks of, you know, pre-fall, pre-sin, and talks about God creating us in his image, male and female. And then he also roots sexuality in the good news, the gospel. And so it is such a well done. It's not just a culture book in terms of culture wars and let's fight for, you know, traditional marriage or traditional sexuality. You know, he goes back to biblical sexuality. No, let's go back to what God always intended from the beginning. So that that I think sounds like a great resource and definitely one that I'm going to be checking out.
Which really is worldview, right? It's like our mm-hmm. telos, our purpose, you know. One analogy that I've given to the students is, you know, if you were to get a laptop, what do you do with that laptop? Do you use it as a skipping stone across a lake? Do you use it, you know, as a puppet show? You know, you use a laptop according to what? According to how it was purposed, according to how it was designed. And so in that, it's like what you're saying, going back to creation, how if God is our creator, then we're going to flourish the best by living according to how we were purposed, created, and designed to live. And then when we suppress that and go against it, like we see so much today, it's not going to go well.
Yeah, I really agree with that. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, and we've sort of touched on it throughout this conversation, but it has to do with, where do you see the pressure points when it comes to like you said, you've got 2.5 teens with your 20-year-old. Cindy, my wife, and I have 4 children, and they've really just come through this stage. So my children are a little bit older. We've got a 28-year-old, a 25-year-old, 22, and then we also have a 17-year-old who's getting ready to graduate high school. And so, you know, I want people to understand that, hey, we're right there in it with you. If you're a parent, or if you've got preteens and you're getting ready to go into it, it can be a really overwhelming season. And I think for us too, it's so different than when I was that age. So as a parent, I think it's probably always a challenge to be a parent of teens, but it does seem to me that with the shifts that have happened, not just culturally, but even just in terms of technology, like you said, you know, yeah, smartphones and the internet, the challenges that we face as parents today versus the challenges that my parents faced when I was a teenager, where do you see the greatest pressure points and challenges, you know, that we're facing as parents today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I would say the greatest are, because they're kind of all around. mm-hmm. I would say we're seeing a lot of kind of the worldview that secularism is swimming in right now. It what's under it all really is about authority. You know, mm-hmm. right now, a big attack on what it means to be a human, our purpose. And with that, where is our authority? Is it going to be mm-hmm. us as our authority, or is it going to be, as Christians, it's going to be God, of course. Right. And it's that's fundamentally sort of the clash we're seeing. And then stemming yeah. up from that, we're going to see, us creating our own meaning and our own purpose and going, I mean, it really is a tale as old as time. This is what mm-hmm. human beings have been doing. This is just, but what it looks like now in our day and age, you know, you hear these messages like, follow your heart, live your truth, you do you, you're mm-hmm. enough, right? The self-help industry is huge. And so in that, this is why we're seeing kids identifying as whatever they might feel that day, whatever sexuality, whatever gender, use my pronouns. And not only are they doing that, but then they're demanding that we affirm them and even celebrate them. And so our kids are feeling that tension right now, you know, specifically in the conversation of gender, for example. You know, should I use the pronouns? Do I have to do this? And then you're kind of deceived into thinking, well, it sounds nice if I go along mm-hmm. with this, because it feels like it would be loving to do this for my friend, whereas biblical love actually would be quite the opposite, because it's not loving to affirm a person and going a way that's ultimately going to be damaging to them, because they're living completely mm-hmm. out of line with how God has created them to, right? And so there's that tension that mm-hmm. our kids are always going to feel unless they're really grounded in their faith and knowing who they are and how best to love their friends biblically. And not just think about definitions like love, tolerance, all these definitions that we hear in our culture, and really freedom is another one. Flip it on its head, and that's the biblical way of viewing those things are always a complete 180 from the cultural way of doing this thing. And so to answer your question, what our kids are facing, I think it's just how to be in the world, but not of the world. And I think the answer to that is we have to be intentionally parenting them and grounding them and helping. And they need to be in the word. And then this is where I think it's a big struggle, is to get our kids into the word of God and renew their minds daily and be grounded into what they believe, you know? So, I mean, when I first sort of woke up back, you know, 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, I think parents can look at it where we're at now with a lot of fear and trepidation, right? What am I going to do? My kid's going to, but the Lord doesn't call us to fear or be in despair, right? And so I've come to a place of just being more excited and intentional. We have to be intentional. We don't have a choice because the culture is catechizing our kids. And if we are not combating that and taking that on and inoculating our kids and having regular, the whole sex talk that our parents maybe had with us one day in our childhoods, we can't do that. You know, so if we're not intentionally walking into this parenting, this Christian parenting gig and having regular conversations with our kids, then they are probably gonna like go into the culture, but I don't look at it in a fearful way, but it, as an opportunity to raise up the next generation of leaders for Christ. So I don't know if that makes sense, but
it does. And I love it because I think we all feel that, that natural and I think appropriate level of concern as parents, again, because we do remember a time where it wasn't crazy. It wasn't, you know, there was always, you know, there were always competing values in culture, but it wasn't crazy. And now it's just crazy. So I think there's an appropriate level of concern. Now, what we do with that, I think, makes all the difference, because what the way I would say it is that, yes, the stakes are high, probably higher than they ever have been. But I would also say the opportunities are great. Like there's a real vacuum of understanding and I think help that's being offered to this generation, this up and coming generation. So, you know, for us to step into that vacuum and to offer a coherent view of the world that actually leads to a better life is something that I think a lot of teens are wanting to respond to, because part of what's happening, I guess, at the big level, like you were saying, and like this conversation I referenced between Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson, is there's a battle going on just for who gets to define truth and reality. What you said, I think, is so true, that what does it even mean to be human? These are such core basic questions that we're wrestling with as a society. And then you've got young people coming into adulthood in a society that is crazy and confused. So to have a voice of reason that is based on ancient truth, you know, and an ancient faith that has guided people, there's such a great opportunity for us if we'll be willing to step up as parents and as local. I think it needs to be in local expressions. That's where this hope needs to come from. So I don't think, you know, we can feel overwhelmed that, well, man, who's going to save the country? Who's going to save society? I think that's almost always a mistake. And I think that's actually part of the curse of modernity, where we do get news from the New York Times, even though we live in San Diego. You know, we can understand what's happening around the world, and we can begin to take on problems that are at that level. You know, we can worry about how's the country going to come back to God, when I think really what we need to be doing is, hey, what's going on in my local area? What's going on in my neighborhood? What's happening in our local schools, and how can I be a voice for reason and truth with this next generation that is coming up here? And I think that's going to make all the difference.
Right. And I think too, whenever parents educate themselves, and it is going to take time. I know we're all busy. Like I've had three kids, I've raised three kids. I'm still, it's busy. Right. Yeah. But what better use of time is there? Right. And I think once you really educate yourself because when you're first coming into this, you're seeing all these battles that are really visible, right? Mm-hmm. With the gender stuff and identifying as this and that and sexuality and critical social theories and oppressed versus the oppressor, that whole framework that we're seeing, all of that. If you learn and educate yourself that really all of that that's so visible and that we're seeing is all that is a cosmic battle of ideas that are stemming from worldviews that are antithetical to one another. And when you can really understand it and gain that clarity with that, that is really empowering, because you're no longer seeing everything up here that's visible, but you're seeing what's underneath all of it. And it's empowering you to be able to then go to your kids and have these great conversations of why they're seeing what they're seeing, why Christianity will always have the best answers to these things we're seeing, because it's the truth. And being able to mesh that out with them, and it really is empowering, and it's going to remove some of that anxiety that you might feel by seeing all these things your kids are faced with, and then empowering them to be able to see it that way, so that they will be able to be more confident in knowing that what they believe is true and why it matters. And then furthermore, you're equipping them to be the leaders in the culture that they're called to be for the kingdom of Christ, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's exciting. I love it.
I think so too. And I love what you said. I've often shared that with people when they're like, oh, well, I don't have the time. It's like, well, everyone has 24 hours in a day. Yeah. So what you're going to spend that time doing something, what better use or allocation of your time, particularly if you're a parent, than developing yourself and then being purposeful about developing your children and perhaps their friends, many of whom are probably in broken homes and looking for stability and guidance. So
it's vital, actually. It's important to do that. I mean, we don't really, it's not so much getting our kids into the best colleges that's as important as them, their eternal destination. Like, we really want to root and ground our kids in Christ. Like, if my kid's a trash truck driver or a janitor or whatever it might be, great. As long as they have their full trust in Jesus and their faith is secure, I'd rather that than them going on and having a mansion and making six figures a year and not knowing Christ.
Well said. Well, as we wrap up, I want to ask you about resources, because I know that's something that has been of great help to you. It's also something that I'm always excited about, resources, and something that helps me understand and articulate the challenges of life and faith. So would you have a short list of books, say 3 to 5 books, that you would recommend for parents that are wanting to become more engaged and more equipped to shape the next generation?
Sure. Yeah. And we can, you know, I'm assuming put it in the resource list too.
Yep.
I would say anything by Nancy Piercy has really helped me to understand what we're seeing in the culture, and this, like you've been talking about, this concept of truth and how we know what is true and epistemology. And she really digs into this, and I can promise you that she will make some light bulbs go off in your understanding of worldview and why we're seeing all that we're seeing. So I would say her book, Total Truth, is excellent. And her book, Love Thy Body. Both of those books will be eye openers. And then, like I said before, Mama Bear Apologetics is just, I recommend that book because it's very accessible. It's very lay level. Anyone can read it, and it will really help you to understand. And it's been a while since I read it, like postmodernism, feminism, all the isms that we're seeing right now, and be able to understand them a little bit better. Natasha Crane has written some really great apologetics books, talking with your kids about God, talking with your kids about Jesus. Her first one, Keeping Your Kids on God's Side, is really great. She's great just to follow in general. And then I would say too, if you're not so much of a reader, there's great podcasts out there that you can follow. Like I said, Natasha Crane's podcast, the Breakpoint podcast from the Colson Center is really good bite-sized nuggets every day. The Unshaken Faith podcast with Natasha and Alisa Childers. Alisa Childers is also really good. My friends, Krista Bontrager, Monique Dusson. They have a YouTube show on Saturday night. It's called the All the Things Show, that talks about the culture and everything in it and how to think about it. They're really good. There are so many resources out there. Fortunately, we're so blessed to have these.
Yeah.
So there's no shortage of resources. Oh, and also I would like to say too, if you have teenagers, think about sending them to Impact 360 summer camps and Summit and Worldview Academy. They all offer camps that are life-changing. Impact 360 and Summit also have gap years where you can send your high school senior who is graduating. They take a break, go for a 9-month gap year. My oldest son did that. He's now in his first year of college, but last year he went through a 9-month program gap year at Impact 360, completely changed his life. He's completely transformed. Now he actually wants to thinking about going into ministry. My graduating senior, he'll be there next year. And they really root and ground these kids and to be disciples for Christ. It's an amazing program. So I would say definitely look into Summit, Impact 360, and Worldview Academy for your high school students.
Well, we'll put a lot of these resources. We'll try not to miss any, but there's a ton, like you said, Jen. So we will link as many of those books and resources, podcasts as possible. Folks can find those. But like you said, there's no shortage of them. So really, if you just start exploring, and a lot of times, you know, you'll be going through one resource, whether it's a book or a podcast, and you'll hear about others that might be more relevant to what you're up against at that moment, which is I'm sure how we've come across a lot of these. You know, is there a way for folks to reach out to you, Jen, if they have more questions, if they wanted to start something similar to United, that they could connect with you and maybe ask follow-on questions? Is that something that you're willing to do?
Yeah, my website is unitednextgen.com. That's G-E-N. So, but yeah, they can reach me there. There's an email on my website. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on again and sharing with us. I do think it's one of the most strategic and important missions that we face as certainly as parents, but even as adult believers to give back and to share with this upcoming generation and to help shape the next generation to live and share Jesus with their peers. So thanks for coming on and sharing with us.
Thanks for having me on.